Well, Sharon, thank you so much for doing this and taking time out.
Oh, it's a great delight. Paul, could you make her a little bit louder?
Yeah, you know, Lily, Chris, you're barely moving the meters here.
Oh, really?
I don't know if Chris just needs to kind of boost your scent. I'm a little nervous about cranking it
up too much. Okay. I'll just keep talking.
Better.
Yeah, there yeah. we go.
Oh, that's better. Much better.
Yeah. So, Sharon, do you know Peter Hedges personally?
I do.
Oh, I interviewed
my goddaughter. Him. Yeah, my goddaughter had a. I knew him anyway, but my goddaughter had a little part in the movie. She was one of the kids.
Oh, that's amazing!
And I had met Peter because we have a mutual friend, and he. I wrote a book called Faith, which he had read, and then he came and sat at my center. And I just saw him at because I had a book that just came out, and he was at a book party.
Oh wow!
So that was really fun.
I love his work so much.
Oh, he's fabulous.
He really is. And I interviewed him when I was at NPR. It was around the time he released The Odd Life of Timothy Green. Uh-huh, and I just, what a beautiful man.
Yeah.
So lovely.
Yeah, he is great. He was really wonderful. And it was really fun. I went and visited the set when, you know, they were filming. I introduced him to someone. Will is my goddaughter. I introduced him to someone. This is Willa's director, which, of course, he thinks of himself as other than that.
Yeah. You know, but
it was
okay,
great.
Since you were on the set, did you meet Steve Carell?
I did not meet Steve Carell.
Oh, no. Sharon. Sad for me, because I'm going to have to hold back on my love. I think that man is so gorgeous, and I hoped you'd met him.
He is cute.
Isn't he?
He's pretty cute.
Well, I've given the thumbs up here, and I think Paul is also good to go over there. So I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the series and kind of
yeah,
why we started
please.
It. Really, movies are my church. They're my sacred space. That's uh-huh. where I go to learn about myself, about the world, you know, to kind of connect with the world as
uh-huh,
well.
Uh-huh.
And so the idea behind this is to talk to people about certain films that have kind of given them that connection or brought about a big idea for them,
uh-huh.
a big kind of life lesson or, you know, the kind of work that you talked about in Real Love.
Yeah.
So do you have any questions for me before we get started?
No. How long is this? It's about
30 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, great.
If not, a little bit less. Yeah. So let's just start by talking about movies. So
yeah.
What role did movies play in your life?
Well, you know, I also love movies, and I don't get to see that many anymore, which is really kind of a shame. And I always think, well, I'm going to take time off, and I'm just going to watch. Because when I was young, when I was a child, they were very, very important and really transported me to a world of much greater possibilities than what I was experiencing. They also almost define normal to me. You know, it's like if I wanted to understand what a family was like, then I would remember a movie and think, oh, well, it should be like that.
Yeah. They were their reflection of what you didn't have at home.
That's right. That's right.
Mm. It's amazing. I feel that same way about the transportation and the power of movies. I think so many folks who had very difficult childhoods, movies and television seem to be the places that they went to escape that. And books.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, well, definitely books. You know, I was a voracious reader. And, but
was this at home
or
were you in the movie theaters when you were watching?
I was in movie theaters because I was young a long time ago. That's what we did.
You know? Oh, wow. So how was that for you? Because I know that you had so many different kind of family situations. You were just kind
well,
of escaped
know,
to the movie
it's
theater?
It's everything. You know, it's really everything. It was delightful and amazing, you know, and also kind of I'd be full of yearning or I'd feel the poignancy of not having what I thought I should have. But I think about that a lot now, particularly because of this movie, Dan in Real Life, that has brought us together. And because my goddaughter did have a small part in that movie, and she was born in China and adopted by my friends and grew up here. And one of the, I think, kind of artistic decisions in the movie was not to explain her. She's the only Asian-looking kid in the movie. You know, she's Steve Carell's niece. And it was almost like saying, this is what a family could look like.
Mm.
You know, you don't have to go into detail and you don't have to explain. It's just like sometimes families look like this. You know, they're diverse or they're multiracial or they're biracial or Now, of course, it would be much more extensive. You know, sometimes they're same gender parents or or whatever. And that was an artistic decision. Like, here's what a family might look like. And that's very different than when I was young, you know, when everybody kind of looked the same, you know.
Yeah. Or you
Mom
saw the
and
same.
Mom and dad
exactly.
And, you know, older brother, and like, you know, which I didn't really have any of it. But it was also interesting when Dan in Real Life came out. Because of that decision, I would sometimes be reading the, like, boards online, you know, discussing the movie. And sometimes people were saying, who's that Asian kid? Why didn't anyone explain her?
Mm.
And I bet that wouldn't happen now. I bet it would be different.
Yeah, you're right. Even then, you know, it's interesting. I think the thing that I love about Dan in Real Life is there's kind of a general acceptance of everyone in that family. And it models that for us in that way that you're describing.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And it's a reflection of, you know, the values of the people who made the movie, which was wonderful.
So your book, Real Love, was inspired by this movie, Dan in Real Life, which was directed by Peter Hedges and written by him. It's a movie that I love. I've talked about it as kind of being a warm hug. When you watch it, you feel like you're being hugged. And I think that's kind of largely because of the way that it portrays love and family and relationships and connection. So tell me, when you first saw this movie, what was it that really moved you, that kind of you found that you weren't finding in other places?
Well, there's a particular line in the movie which was very, very powerful. I mean, I love the movie, but there was a line that was extremely powerful for me, which is love is not a feeling, it's an ability.
Mm.
Love is not a feeling, it's an ability. And it's, you know, even though Steve Carell is an advice columnist in the movie, it's not he who says it, someone else says it. But
yeah, it's the teenage boyfriend of his middle daughter. And I love that he actually, being Colombian, he says it in Spanish first.
Right, yeah. That's right.
El amor no es un sentimiento, es una habilidad. Yeah.
He does. So it's like, and it so reflected some of the most powerful experiences I had in meditation, doing intensive meditation in my life. And particularly this time I went to Burma in 1985, and I did a 3-month really immersive, intensive period of loving kindness meditation, which is a particular methodology that is dedicated to opening one's heart and looking at really exploring what love means and what it feels like for oneself, for others, for all of life. And like many really profound experiences, I think it's hard for me at least to put it into words. But it was extremely important. And that was a moment when I was practicing. And I realized that up until a certain time there, when I was there, I'd always thought of love as kind of like a commodity. It was almost like a package in someone else's hands. And if it was delivered to me, I'd have love. And if it was taken away from me, I'd have no love in my life and I'd be bereft. And it's almost like the delivery, I could see the delivery person standing on my doorstep, looking at the address and thinking, nah, I think I'll go somewhere else. And I'd be like, wait a minute, you know, then I'll have nothing.
Hmm.
And that turned around when I was there and I realized, no, it's inside me. It's a capacity that's within me. It's mine. And other people or other things, you know, great art or all kinds of things might enliven it and nourish it and enhance it or threaten it, but it's mine. And there was an enormous turning point for me, and there it was right in the movie in that one line. And so I put it in, you know, the book, and I had editors argue with me and saying, you can't say that. Of course love is a feeling. It's the feeling we yearn for. It's what we want. It's what we need. We're fixated on. So, you know, of course it is a feeling as well, but I think that's a tremendous limitation. And it is so far bigger than a feeling. It is an ability inside of us.
Hmm. What I love about that, especially as a single woman, is that I often feel like love is portrayed as something you only get if you are coupled, you know, or if you have a family, if you choose to have children. Like, there, to your point, there's a lot of places where you receive it, but it doesn't seem like something you yourself can do, or at least it's not portrayed in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very much so. When I was first proposing the book, somebody said to me, someone in publishing said to me, you know, the love market is saturated, meaning that the relationship market is saturated,
yeah.
Like all those books on how to find a relationship, how to fix a relationship, how to end a relationship well, you know. But I think the statistics are kind of startling. Somebody just told me that in a recent bit of research, something like 72% of Americans, whether they're in a relationship or not, say that they're lonely.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's actually not about whether one is in a relationship or not. It's about a quality of connection, which can only come from within.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I really love about Dan in real life. And reading your work, it's really apparent to me that it's almost like you wrote this movie to me.
Because I'll tell Peter that.
Yeah. Tell Peter that. Clearly, you wrote this movie. Because so much of what they're talking about is what you write about. The idea of love being about connection. You know, you wrote this in your column for On Being. Love is a gargantuan topic and one that often feels too complex to even talk about. And surely holidays like Valentine's Day have us believe that love is, by definition, all about infatuation, admiration, chocolates and hearts. While those things can certainly be part of love, they're also the barriers we come up against in love, the difficult stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, our self-worth, our abilities to love and to be loved. And I feel like the main characters in this film, which are really the family that Dan has, his three daughters and him, that's what they're fighting, kind of struggling with, these ideas. And I just wondered, you know, you talked about that one phrase, but what else about this film really spoke to you?
Well, you know, in terms of what you just said, you know, in fact, they're not the picture-perfect family. Mother's died.
Hmm.
He's trying to raise, you know, three daughters as a single man, single father. You know, they're already struggling. And I think that we, you know, seeing the vulnerability of characters like that, seeing their frailty, seeing their imperfection is really very good for us. I mean, he's really not a perfect dude either, no. You know.
And in many ways, he says, as an advice columnist, he himself is not practicing a lot of what he is preaching, right? What he's telling his readers. And his own daughter, you know, the middle child, the 14-year-old, it's through her that he finally realizes that he has kind of lost hope in love.
Yeah. Yeah, which is fantastic, you know, because it is through revealing our own vulnerability that we find ourselves in one another, that we're able to resonate, that we can have compassion. And I like that he's not superhuman, you know, that.
Yeah.
And Juliette Binoche, you know, as well, as the kind of love interest, it's a little puzzling that each of those brothers who are so very different, you know, would be attractive to her.
Yeah.
And you think, well, what's going on with her, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because watching it, I've seen this movie many times because I love Steve Carell. I love the character as well that he plays in the movie so much. And at first it used to bother me that her character wasn't as fleshed out, you know, particularly as a woman watching her. I felt like, oh, she's just this beautiful woman, mysterious woman who comes in. But in many ways, I think that she's just a vehicle for Dan to fall in love with himself again. Mm-hmm. He's kind of lost that ability to even look at himself.
Yeah, well, that's very true. And it's encouraging and exciting to see the younger generation, you know, to see the daughters who are quite fleshed out in a way and very you can see the future, you know.
Yeah, it's so true. So, you know, because of what we're talking about, which is really connection in this way, I wonder how you have really shaped and defined love in a different way for yourself. I mean, I know you've kind of been talking about it here, but how do you find these connections? What are the ways that you look for them in your own life?
Well, for me, and you know, my own particular background has a lot to do with learning meditation when I was quite young, when I was 18, and meditating all these years and teaching meditation. So for me, like that quality of love and very, very deep connection comes from how we pay attention. And even biochemically, they say that, you know, in terms of like oxytocin or, you know, neurotransmitters or vagal tone changes and all that. You know, it's not about a particular relationship. It's not about going off into the sunset together. It's not about vows. You know, it's about a moment of really being present.
Mm.
We can have that same experience with a stranger in an elevator if we're really paying attention.
Yeah.
It may manifest very differently, you know, and
most strangers don't look like Juliette Binoche, sadly.
Well, yeah, or even Steve Carell.
Or Steve Carell,
yeah. But there are so many surprises in life. There's so many kind of layers of subtlety and resonance when we pay attention, and when we're distracted, when we're overwrought, when we're bored, which is a way of not paying attention, then that connection is not going to be there. And so the focus is really on changing the way we pay attention. And they're very deep questions. You know, for me in my life, like as I began practice, it was like, who do I pay attention to? And who do I look through?
Yeah.
Who do I objectify? Who doesn't count in my mind? You know, and what happens when I stop and I thank that person who's performing a service for me, or and I look at them instead of through them. It's the world just lights up, you know. There are people there, not objects. And, you know, how do I pay attention to myself? In particular, I only think about the things I don't like and the mistakes I've made and, you know, the things I could have done better. Or do I give a little airtime, you know, to, wow, you tried, you know, or look at that. You did five great things the same morning you did that stupid thing, or or whatever it is. And, you know, having a more expansive, truthful, in fact, view of myself and others, and especially around the issue of distraction. You know, am I actually really listening?
Yeah.
Or not? And if I am, then it is a different quality of connection that just emerges.
I think that's something that's lost often when you talk about the idea of love, is that you have to be present and open to be able to receive it and give it.
I think that's very true. And it's not only for new kind of relationships, but it's also for the person we've known forever, you know? Like, we certainly stop paying attention, and we have so many assumptions. And, you know, maybe the assumptions are more glaring around a stranger. I have a story in the book about a writer friend of mine who gave a lecture somewhere in the country. And then he was having dinner in a restaurant, and this group of people came up to him, and this woman came out of the group and said to him, I was at your lecture. And his heart just sank because he took a look at her and he thought, oh, she doesn't look very well educated, and, you know, she's probably not that smart. And in the course of the lecture, he had mentioned how important reading Proust, Remembrances of Things Past, had been in his life. So this woman said to him, I really liked your lecture. She said, but I have to say that I really find reading Proust in the original French much better. You know, and so he looked at that assumption like, whoa, you know, look at that. And you know, half the time we don't see it and we don't question those. And they really affect how we see one another. And it actually happens even with people we've known for a long time, whether a partner or a friend or a colleague. It's we kind of stop seeing the layers and the changes and so on. And so opening up to that possibility really does. It's like the world gets much more vivid and alive, and it's pretty great.
I feel like what you just said so embodies the character of Marie that Juliette Binoche plays. Because I feel like that's one of the reasons why Dan's attracted to her, is because she is so open to everything around her and the way she carries herself, the way she receives people and listens. And I never thought of it that way. It's interesting. You know, one of my favorite lines in the movie comes right at the end when Dan's writing his first nationally syndicated advice column. I don't know if you remember, but he says, if we're really honest with ourselves, most of the time, our plans don't work out as we'd hoped. So instead of asking our young people, what are your plans? What do you plan to do with your life? Maybe we should tell them this. Plan to be surprised. And it's really falling with what you're saying right there. And, you know, I wonder, how has this journey that you've been taking, this journey of love, surprised you? What are the surprises that you've found?
I think I've found a lot of surprises, and and part of it is how available love actually is for us in that moment of being really present, and the poignancy too of the longing, you know, and how so many people define love in that romantic fashion, and how really how lonely people are. That's like a kind of unpleasant surprise. And the other side of it is that connection is really near at hand. And I think part of what's happening certainly in America is that a lot of I also quote in the book this great book which has a great title, Bowling Alone. you know, which is about the breakdown of kind of social systems, ways we used to come together, that aren't so strong anymore, and how maybe new institutions haven't arisen. And so I'm kind of surprised at how efforts to come together are really kind of pioneering, you know, and that we need to be creative and think of ways that we can find each other and be together. And yet I think it's really possible, but we can't count on the maybe things we were familiar with.
That's so true. How has this movie changed for you, you know, as you've watched it, you know, since the first time that you watched it?
Well, of course, you know, because my goddaughter was in it, it's like, and she doesn't have a line, she barks because you may
she
remember
plays at the talent show. Yeah, she plays a dog.
Yeah, so that was her audition. She had a bark. I've watched it. Of course, she's grown up now, so it's kind of startling to see how time in real life passes and a movie does not, you know. And there's a certain sense of I appreciate even more that depiction of family.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel, you know, if Peter were making the movie now, it would be even more diverse and more complex. And that he was actually pushing an edge at the time.
At the time, yeah.
In seeing that. And I also feel, you know, it's kind of like the role of Steve Carell's parents or, you know, the kind of less flashy, very steadying.
The stable
that's
core.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the John Mahoney and Diane Wiest, who are his parents, are so great in that role.
Yeah.
Because I think the thing that also we haven't talked about, which is what I love about the film, is that it doesn't shy away from confronting the reality of situations. And people call each other out, as family does, on bullshit. You're like, oh, yeah, this is bullshit. You're acting a certain way, right? But yet it's always through the lens of acceptance and love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's truth-telling, right?
Yeah. It's so true.
And makes for, you know, a real kind of family that, in contrast to either just being nice all the time, you know, and unreal.
Yeah, which is unrecognizable.
Vicious,
you know? When you see a family like that on screen, I don't think you can relate to that. Or at least I can't.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about Dan in real life that you want to say that, you know, maybe I didn't ask you about or?
Oh, I think, you know, I saw Peter not long ago, like I said, when he was at a book party and it was really tremendous because I told him that I was thinking about for myself, you know, that maybe I would try writing a play or something like that, I'm just drawn to the idea of a whole other form of creativity, and I said, but my real problem is that I don't have a story, you know, like if I had something. The story that I felt compelled to write. I'd learn how. I mean, I don't know how to write a play, for example, but I feel like I can at least study the craft if I had something to say. And he just looked at me and he said, your life is your story, you know, that's your story. You know, just choose a section. And so then I think of the movie now in terms of his life, you know, and his understanding of family and his you know, his having done just that, and I really appreciate it, you know, every level for that.
That reminds me of something that you wrote, and I can't remember where I pulled it from, where you ask, what are the stories we tell ourselves, and why is it that we tell stories in order to stay afloat? What is it about stories that makes us feel safer, better prepared for survival, and what does all of this have to do with love?
Yeah,
good question.
That's great. Yeah, that's a good question. I was
you ask good questions, Sharon.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I was somewhere. I was in Kentucky, I think, visiting Bell Hooks, actually, and I was teaching, and somewhere in the class, somebody said, "I don't understand why you say this thing about people telling a story about us. People don't know us. How could they be telling a story about us?" And I just said, everything in life tells a story about us. Architecture tells a story about mm-hmm. us, you know, like where you have to enter a building. And if you're in a wheelchair, you know, that tells a story about who you are and how you're seen and how you're considered. And, you know, we're constantly receiving these stories. And maybe that's another great thing about movies is that it's a conscious thing, you know?
Yeah.
We're consciously going to see a narrative and a story being told and finding ourselves in it or not. And, you know, rather than the kind of unconscious or half-conscious thing which goes on all day long, you know, how someone looks at us and, you know, how they speak to us and how we speak to ourselves and, you know, whether we say anything or we just sit silently in the corner. Or,
yeah.
You know, everything is sort of part of a greater narrative that we're weaving and that has been woven about us.
Hmm. So true. Well, thank you so much, Sharon. I so appreciate your work, your writing, and I mean, what it's taught me about looking at love. So thank you, really.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for picking
this together sometime.
Yes, yes, we have to make this happen, definitely. And thank you for choosing this film because I'll use any excuse to watch it over again. It really was such a joy to rewatch.
That's great. Thank you.
Well, have a great day over there, Paul. Hello. I send you muchos abrazos, okay?
Okay. Gracias.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.